about to blow. Nigga, what y'all got to roll them up? Backwoods, Sierra Vegas, straight chocolate Phillies.
Nah, straight. Nigga, dog with that.
Nigga, I was listening to Black and Mild.
Y'all nigga don't know nothing about the corona.
Kanye.
cause you don't know what can happen. Why you need a lucky charm these days? Don't know. Why you need a lucky charm these days? Cause you don't know what can happen. Why you need a lucky charm these days? Don't know.
You know those moments when you lose control and your head it goes inside out. Makes you wanna scream and shout, so you do. The rage and the anger, it just lifts like a feather in a cool, cool breeze. Now you feel at ease. Don't be bothered by the little things that can bother you. Only hold a grudge if you think that you can talk it through. Take a step back and take two right in front of you. No one said the ride was easy, gotta let
Why
it go.
Do I get so scared about things I don't know? About things that I think of from my place unknown. Like when I see the sea, another place below. Stress no more. Don't trip, they tell you. Don't trip on your first date. Don't trip, cause it's not okay. Don't trip, they tell you. Don't trip on your first date. Don't trip, cause it's not okay. Why you need a lucky charm these days? Cause you don't know what can happen. Why you need a lucky charm these days? Don't know. Why you need a lucky charm these days? Cause you don't know.
But things happen now the way they ain't used to. So why not go the extra mile and make sure that we're good the way we supposed to?
To survive.
Ain't that crazy that we're not just worried about living a good life? That it comes down to stress about staying alive. And I'll just hope we have a good night. But so and so and so it goes. And you're not alone to feel that way. If you got a prayer, then do so. I'll pack my lucky charm and go about my day. My lucky charm and go my way. Got my lucky charm here to stay. About my day. About my
this day. Has nothing to do with what we become. Inspired about.
Why I Love You by Kreet, the Rosewater CTZ remix. I am Carla. You are listening to the Friday edition of Off the Hour, your source of daily COVID-free news. So last week, I brought you the story of Carla White, who was a woman who was the last holdout tenant for the demolition project of a residential building. Her rent was $400 a month, and that was why she was refusing to leave, because she knew that with the current Montreal tenant market, she would not be able to find an apartment for the same price. Well, there has been an update to the story. So, developer to let Quebec Rental Board decide on the case of a holdout tenant. As I said last week, I mentioned the story of Carla White. Well, there has been a development in the story because the Mundy senior partners, Michael and David Owen, said that they have made numerous offers to tenant Carla White, who has so far refused to leave her apartment so that it can be demolished to make way for a new 176-unit mixed-use building. They are headed to the Quebec Rental Board to decide what the compensation that they need to give Ms. White is going to be. A municipal committee decided earlier this month to approve the demolition of the building, which is situated downtown, on the condition that the developer demonstrate that the file has been settled with the tenant that is causing the holdout. The decision has been appealed, though the developers say they weren't the ones to do it. White, who was formerly homeless, said that she doesn't want to leave until she's provided with an acceptable apartment on a long-term affordable lease or enough compensation to ensure she won't have to return to the street. Michael Owen said that the developer sees no path to reaching an agreement with White, who he says is demanding a penthouse apartment worth thousands a month on an indefinite lease. Owen says that the developers are sensitive to White's situation, but have already offered her a better apartment at her current $400 rent, less than a third than what it would otherwise normally cost, or compensation many times what the law requires. White's lawyer, Manuel Johnson, said that his client isn't being unreasonable, noting that she's willing to accept financial compensation instead of an apartment. And without going into details on the amount, we feel that the financial compensation she is asking for is fair and reasonable in the circumstances, taking into account the length of her occupancy, 10 years, the amount of her rent, and the possibility of her finding an adequate dwelling in the current superheated rental market of Montreal. White and her lawyers have said that she refused the apartment that was offered to her because she didn't feel that she would be safe there. I am keeping an eye on this story. I want to see what the resolution is going to be. I think it's a really interesting case. And I feel like since last week I brought you the story of a building where the tenants were really fighting for avoiding a rent eviction because they were renovating the building and they knew that if they had they were leaving the building, they wouldn't be able to find reasonable accommodations when they came back, and that, you know, the owners of the building were going to hike the price. And I feel like this is going to be a reoccurring story in the Montreal rental market, of either people being maybe not evicted but renovicted, of people having to become holdout tenants because they know that with the current state of the housing market, it is very, very, very difficult to be able to find any sort of rent or any sort of lease that is a reasonable amount. I remember seeing a chart earlier of since the price of housing is not really going up sort of proportionally to the hike of wages. One of the things that Montreal is really known for, at least that I knew that Montreal was really known for, is cheap rent. So it's kind of sad to see that that like fantasy of owning a really cheap apartment for like, you know, $600 a month is not really reality anymore, but it is what it is. Our next story, enhanced police presence does not solve everything, as cohabitation with the houseless population remains difficult to poor merchants. I feel like I could have told you that without really needing the article, but basically, 5 months after the creation of the Crisis Unit Against Insecurity in the east of the city center, so around the village, local traders are noticing an increase in police presence, but add that the situation remains difficult. The surroundings of Emily Yamlin Park and the west of the village retain their appearance of a disaster area on the eve of the summer season. A large homeless population has taken up residence there. According to Nicolas Plante, manager of the Bar Le Date, police officers are more present. There are gestures that have been made, but that is not enough yet. There is a beginning. There are things that are beginning, but it clearly will take more time than that, end quote. According to a municipal report made public on Wednesday, 40 officers have been assigned to the village sector, and inspectors from the Société de Transport de Montréal have reinforced their presence at the Béry-Ucam station, that I have noticed too. Dozens of drug dealers have been arrested, and the mobile mediation and social intervention team has been enhanced in the area. But according to, you know, merchants and business owners in the area, that hasn't done much to change the situation. Sorry. You know, police presence is nice. It's fine and all. I say I'm not really a big fan of police, but it's fine and all, but it doesn't really get to the core of the issue of why people are homeless, whether that be due to the unaffordable price of housing, the absolutely awful conditions that you find in homeless shelters, or just mental health, or opiate addiction. It's sort of trying to fix a problem without really addressing the root of the issue, and instead just trying to quell the symptoms, if that makes sense in any way, shape, or form. I understand that it's really hard for merchants, especially since we're entering the summer season and you see a boom in sort of people since, you know, school is out, there are shorter business hours, people go out, the sun the sun sets down later, so people are, you know, sort of willing to be out and enjoy the weather. So, you know, that means going to bar, going to restaurants, shopping. It is a hard situation, but at the same time, you can't really, like, blame the houseless people. It's not that they're, it's not their fault that they're homeless at all. It's due to greater circumstances that are greater and out of their control. I will see how the situation ends up. Hopefully we get to make a follow-up on it. And while we're talking about summer, one of the things Montreal is really known for is construction, and that there's construction all the time. There was construction on St. Catherine Street, and it was reopened Thursday morning at Robert Bourassa Boulevard, more than 2 months after its emergency closure caused by the precarious state of a historical building. So the construction work to stabilize the building was carried out by the City of Montreal itself. It's the Yeager building, by the way. And Montreal Plante. Valérie Plante said that she will send the invoice to the owner of the building, which is a New York real estate magnate. On the subject, she had to say, quote, "The reopening of St. Catherine Street is excellent news," end quote, said the head of urban planning for the Plante administration, Robert Baudry. "We carried out the security work in place of the owner so that the street could be reopened as quickly as possible to ensure that the heritage building was preserved. The boss of Montréal Centre-Ville, the local business development company, welcomed the news. Traders in the area were impatient to see the beautiful season as the Grand Prix is arriving next week, and not having St. Catherine open for one of the biggest weekends in Montreal in the entire year for Montreal would have been not that great. It was a disturbing report from engineers that forced the closure of the St. Catherine Street at the end of March. It was feared that the side of the wall of the Yeager building would collapse, taking with the facade with it. The Yeager building was badly affected by the fire of two of its neighbors, which occurred in 2021. I would like to say, while we're on the topic of the Grand Prix is next week. I have never been to the Grand Prix. I have people that I know who've been. They said it's been an amazing time. And while I am kind of a homer and I would love to say that I would love to see Lance Stroll win, I am a Lewis Hamilton fan through and through. So who knows? Maybe he might win. But while we're still on the topic of streets, SRB P9, the extension to Notre Dame, will ultimately cost $167 million. I live in one of the areas that was affected by the building of the SRB, so I saw the construction of it. Just to give you an index of how long it took, the construction of the SRB started, I believe I was in secondary two, so that would have been 2015. They finished the construction when I believe I was in my first... I was either in my last year of CJEP or my first year of university, so it has been a while that it has taken to build the SRB. So the extension, the contract was adopted at the most recent meeting of the executive committee Wednesday behind closed doors. In itself, the cost of the work will be around $136 million, but there is a contingency plan of $26.8 million and incidents of $3.5 million that raised the bill to $167.2 million. Of the total, Montreal will assume the expense of $78.2 million. The rest of the funding will be provided by the Regional Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the ARTM. They are the people who fix the prices for things such as the metro, the bus. They're the people who plan the routes. In its decision-making documents, the city also specified that the net cost of the project is $152.4 million when reduced by the federal and provincial rebates. According to the forecast, the amount to be paid will be assumed to be 46.7% of the central city and 42.4% by the ARTM and 1.7% by Bell and 9.2% by the CSM, which is Commission of Electrical Services of Montreal. In the office of Mayor Valérie Plante, however, it is recalled that the contract must first be ratified by the ARTM and the Council of Ministers in the coming weeks. This is an important step which confirms the desire of all partners to be complete in the final section of the SRB P9 up the Rue Notre-Dame. That is Catherine Cadet who specified this. I really hope that this can be done quickly, although As I said, the state of my jaw contraction makes it that nothing here is done quickly. But, you know, the SRB, it's been needed to be done for years, especially as someone who has seen how transport is done on PNEF. It actually was quite necessary for quicker transport and also for safety issues. Having to run in a highway to take the bus was really like not ideal. So I understand why the SRB exists, because it really needed to be done. We're moving to a musical break. This is 21 Days by Jeffrey.
Salsa para su gringa, para llevar rojo, verde o rojo.
I can't get lost again. I can't get lost. Days gone wasted. I wanted all the action. Times have changed. I'm more so from your fiction. Days gone wasted. I wanted all the action. Times have changed. I'm more so from pulled myself out of my head to keep you in focus. To finally notice all your signs. I kept feeding temptation, still needed attention from every girl in the town. But I wanna live easy, and I want it with you. Yeah, I wanna live easy, and I got it with you. All on my mind, all on my mind. 20 more nights in the white, 100 more pretty faces. I can't get lost again, I can't get lost. Days gone wasted, I wanted all the action. Times have changed, I'm lost so from your fiction. Days gone wasted, I wanted all the action. Times have changed. I'm all soft now. Me high, walk me high.
been gone? Will you show me how? Will you keep it gone? Will you show me how to get back home? It's such a bad habit, yet I don't know why. I keep coming back to you, yet I don't know why. I keep coming back. It's such a bad habit, yet I don't know why. I keep coming back to you, yet I don't know why. Keep on coming back, stepping out instead of flying your part. Did we stray too far? Upset your heart, leaving visible scars. If I go your way, will you keep it going? Will you show me how? Will you keep it going? Will you show me how? Such a bad habit, yet I don't know why. I keep coming back to you, yet I don't know why. I keep coming back. Such a bad habit, yet I don't know why. I keep coming back to you, yet I don't know why. I keep on coming back.
Both 21 Days and Bad Habit by Jeffrey. If you don't know by this point, I am obsessed with Jeffrey and I use every opportunity I can to play his music. You are listening to Off the Hour Friday Edition, your source of daily corporate free news. I am your host, Carla. And as per usual, as is tradition, both on Off the Hour and on Voices of Montreal, our final segment of the show is usually reserved to giving a suggestion. For me, it's usually an article I think you should check out. This week, I broke the rule and I'm giving you two. The first one is this week, there have been ceremonies and commemoration and op-eds that have been starting to be written about the 10-year anniversary of the tragedy of Lac Mégantic that occurred on July 6, 2013. Since we're sort of in the lead up to the month of July and there have been the story with the fires, it's been kind of reminiscent. In case you don't know what happened, on July 6, 2013, an unintended 73-car Montreal, Maine and Atlantic Railway freight train carrying Bakken Formation crude oil rolled down a slope from the nearby town of Nantes and derailed into downtown Lac Mégantic, resulting in the explosion and fire of multiple tank cars. 47 people were killed. More than 30 buildings in Lac Mégantic town center, roughly half of the downtown area, were destroyed, and all but three of the 39 remaining buildings had to be demolished due to petroleum contamination. Le Soleil, La Tribune, and, you know, sort of all these sort of co-op newspapers, they have been writing a series of articles in the lead up to the 10-year anniversary that I think are really worth checking out. They did an interview with Richard Labrie, who was the conductor of the train, and I think this is his first time publicly speaking out since, not since the derailment, but since the trial where they were found, where they were acquitted of all charges. So the Soleil has been writing these series of articles. They've been really good. I think the article, Il y a 10 ans, Lac Mégantic, les héros de la première heure racontent leur enfer, by Matsu Lamoth. He gets residents, first responders, city officials to share their stories of the derailment of, you know, the night of the derailment, sort of the first hour as everything is unfolding. It is, in my opinion, top-notch journalism. It's a great piece to read, not only on sort of like Migrants and then, the changes that have occurred in the city since, and some of the unresolved frustration from the situation towards the not only MMA, but Transport Canada and other organizations. It's actually a really great read of local journalism. I highly recommend you check out. And the piece that I think you should also really check out. So by virtue of being a political science major, a lot of my friends ask me what outlets they should read for news or for coverage of certain situations. And they're always shocked when I mention Teen Vogue. But since the 2016 American election, I would argue that Teen Vogue has done a better job at covering certain political issues and societal issues than certain media publication. They have amazing writers, and especially since Varsha Sharma, who is the former managing director at Now This, took over as editor-in-chief, all of their news and political content has been amazing and absolutely worth checking out. They have an article called "A Youth Gun Violence Activist Can't Be Asked to Save the World" by Delaney Tarr. The article is from December 2022, and I would like to say that, you know, the story is a bit dated, but honestly, when you think about how gun violence is an omnipresent fact of life for young Americans, the story is really not that out of date. But I believe that the essence of the article is captured really well in the editor's note, which reads, "At Teen Vogue, we fully believe in young people's power and want their words and experiences to be at the heart of our publication. At any age, organizing is a way to build community, live your values, and try to mend a broken world, but covering youth activists can sometimes feel like a trap. Our society alternately minimizes, tokenizes, and commodifies young people, exploiting them or using them as props. We put tremendous pressure on them to save the world. Sometimes we've been guilty of that in our coverage too. All of that pressure can take a toll, especially for those needing to deal with the trauma of gun violence. For our package, acknowledging the decade that has passed since the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, we heard from youth activists against gun violence about the darker sides of this work and how it has changed for them, because building a better future is on all of us together." I absolutely think you should check it out. It's a great article. And honestly, just check out Teen Vogue in general. I know it sounds really cheesy, but they are a great publication. So to write out the show, this is going to be Holiday by Dana Williams. You have been listening to Off the Hour Friday. See you next week. You go.